About 2 hours ago, I saw one of the funniest things I've ever seen living in the city. I was walking home from Whale Foods, getting dinner and groceries and stuff like that. And I observed from, I don't want to dox myself too hard, but there was a parking lot to a large chain store that in the area is pretty notable for being very hawkish about their parking spots, right?
Sure.
And in a city that is also known for being very hawkish about its parking spots.
Yeah.
Making sure that you are not parked where you're not supposed to be. So I see somebody getting towed out of this parking lot. And I think, oof, that sucks, buddy. That sucks, buddy. I also looked, interestingly, I looked for a ticket on the dashboard that wasn't there. And then I realized that's not how that works. It's a private towing company. So silly, whatever. And then as I was banishing that thought from my head, I hear this little clomping, clomping, flip flap noise from across the street to my left, where and I was like, that's really weird. And I see somebody with their dry cleaning over their shoulder starting to hurriedly run towards the tow truck. And then they, with all of their body, are like, wait, stop, please, and starts booking it down the middle of the street after this tow truck guy who is not stopping.
Yeah, no.
So he is flopping, flip-flopping down the clopping of the street, plastic-wrapped dress shorts billowing in the wind on his shoulder behind him, running down the street, going, no, please, my car.
I feel bad for this person, but ultimately, the only winning here is if we develop a city that requires less car dependence.
Like, every time I got towed when I lived in Minneapolis, I laughed it off, too. Like, it's so horrible in the moment, but it...
But you have to immediately kind of pass through it. You just gotta be like, okay, this is what happened now, I guess.
And it's just that image of him running down the street with what is effectively a modern day cape trying to chase after this car. That's going to live with me for a while.
Dry cleaning man, write in. What's your story?
Don't. Please don't.
Tell us.
I know what your story is. You parked at the store that you were not supposed to park at while you went and got your dry cleaning done.
Which,
and they,
man,
caught you.
They must have been fast, because like dry cleaning pickup is like 5 minutes.
I don't know why he would have been in there for any longer, but you know they got cameras out there for that shit, and they see someone get in that car and walk away. They're just like, all right. I don't think the towing company is actually that far either.
Oh yeah, see, that's
the
awful bit, right?
He probably had to run all the way back there. At least it was. I mean, if it's not that far, it's actually pretty good, because then he doesn't have to call an Uber. At least,
although, what do you want to bet they're going to charge him the same amount, though?
Oh, I mean, yeah, no, it's don't do that. Let's get started. We trek around a little mountain park, finding shells, feathers, and all sorts of delightful little trinkets as we go on a short hike today. Yeah!
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Hello! It's a beautiful, sunny, sunny, beautiful day here in the city.
It's honestly really, really nice out.
And I could not imagine wanting to leave to go for a short hike, but here we are, and we are all the better having done so. This is Storm Buds, the video game variety show. Pretty significant bias towards Final Fantasy XIV, because we will continue our discussion.
Oh boy, will we.
Final Fantasy XIV's Dawn Trail. Did you get through the third chapter?
Yes, I did.
You started talking about some stuff that I was like, oh, he's getting farther than he thought he would. So.
The third chapter, to my recollection, ends on the moment I was venting to you about this morning.
Yes. Okie dokie. We'll get excited for that. We are going to talk about Short Hike, and of course, I'm also going to introduce myself. I'm your Julia of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my co-Goth Cotillion of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
I'm not doing that. Hi.
Perfect. 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 Good job. Okay. Yes, today we're talking about A Short Hike. And A Short Hike is an indie game that was on our list and is part of our theme of summer vacation. Summer vacation games, because of Dawn Trail.
Also, apparently a Humble game, which like is the second one of these in a month we've done, I think by coincidence.
By coincidence. It's also the second one of these that we've done that is kicked ass.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so, it's so nice to like fully, thoroughly love a game again. It's been a couple weeks of me not being a grumpy one.
I don't know that Humble is doing much more publishing since I got bought by IGN a couple years ago or whatever. Yeah. But based on this, it looks like there was like a couple year period where they were kind of turning out some bangers there.
A Short Hike is an adventure video game by Canadian indie game designer Adam Robinson Yu, also known as Adam G. Ryu. This is from the Short Hike Wikipedia page. It's an open world exploration game in which the player is tasked with reaching the summit of a mountain to get cell phone reception. Hilarious. You are a little penguin girl named Claire, and you are brought out to Hawk Peak Provincial Park by your aunt. And just as a way to get away from the city. And the first thing you do is complain about there not being cell phone reception.
Which is kind of so like, make you seem kind of like, oh, you're like an indoor kid who's always on their phone. But by the end, we get a reveal that actually there was a very good reason you needed cell phone reception.
This game, it took me about an hour to get to credits. I kind of want to go back and get all the little secrets and extra stuff. There's a lot to discover in this provincial park, even though it is a very short game. There's a couple currency systems. You can find coins around the island with which you buy more of these feathers that help you glide and climb all over this beautiful, beautiful mountain landscape. And this is a game. The graphics of this game are pretty notable. The art is really cutesy, highly stylized 3D art, but you can apply a pixel filter of your choosing to overlay this to give it whatever feel you want. Do you remember which level of pixelation you played this game at?
I think I played it at the default, which
big
gives
and crunchy.
Which gives it like a good sort of like, I think I talked before, I really am enjoying kind of people finding stuff to do with sort of the PlayStation 1 aesthetic. Is how I describe this.
I played it without the pixels actually. Really liked the way it looked, just as sort of a comic like. Comic style sort of pop art piece that it had, and I think it looks great at all levels. I just thought that one really spoke to me. There are all sorts of little characters, little anthropomorphic characters that you are going to run into. There's people who are going to challenge you to a race. There's people who are going to make you collect things. And what's really separates this game from every other. Like a lot of other short adventure games are two things for me. One is the movement in this game.
It feels so
very, very, very good. That is a well-crafted, well-oiled machine. Claire hops, skips, and jumps at a level that is just feels really excellent. And the gliding mechanic is also really fun. The camera actually kind of has a semi-automatic feel to it, but it is very intentional and fun in a way similar to Tunic, where certain treasure chests may be hidden behind perspectives that you can only unlock if you go up and then you put your eyes in a viewfinder to see something from a different way. Very clever. Another thing that this game stands out to me is the dialogue, and the way I want to describe this is that the dialogue is written such that everyone speaks like I type.
Yes. No, that's the thing. A couple of times it fell a little too far on the side of cutesy for me, but for the most part, I found a lot of the dialogue very charming. People talk like they're texting each other.
The sentences are five words at most any given time. Well, certain characters like your aunt will speak in complete sentences, but everyone else that's a lot younger will speak just like, oh, okay, maybe don't try climbing so hard or something, you know?
Like, oh my god, the rock climbers, like when you're talking to the rock climbers.
The one guy that speaks in all caps is so funny.
And he's just like, he's obsessed with like a certain, like, no, it's not just the two of us. There are hundreds of rock climbers worldwide.
We're dropping the bucket. I could talk for probably the entire hour about each of the individuals that we've met.
I will say my favorite, funniest interaction that just actually made me laugh out loud is when you learn how to fish from the guy by the pond.
I never did this.
You never did
so
this?
Don't, yeah, no, okay. I skipped the fishing. Oh, man, I want you to talk about it.
God.
Well, it's like it's
I don't want to hear about it.
Much like everything else in this game, this is a game that has like a bunch of different little bespoke systems, but the game itself is super chill, and all of the systems are super chill.
Everything, like, yes, everything in this is completely optional. The only objective you have is to get to the top of the mountain so that you get your cell phone reception.
Yes.
Everything else that you discover along the way is pure distraction, and this game is 98% distraction.
Yes. And like in the fishing minigame has no depth to it. There's no gauge. It's not Stardew Valley. You throw the rod out and then you wait for it to get pulled under, and then you pull it back and you've got a fish. And it feels nice. It feels nice to just sit there and reel some fish in.
Did you end up playing base stick ball?
I did not play base stick ball. I talked to them, but I didn't.
Oh, man. Base stick ball slapped. It was so fun.
You can tell me about base stick ball.
Yeah, you just have to... it's like volleyball, but with a stick.
Sure.
And then you volley the ball back and forth with another kid, and the longer you go, the more rewards you get. One of them, of course, being one of these coveted golden feathers.
Yes.
There are golden feathers scattered across the island, and they are basically a stamina gauge.
It's kind of the only real mechanic the game has, is managing your golden feathers.
Yes, and there are some mechanics later that take the golden feather. Well, maybe just one mechanic away. No, there's like two that kind of limit your use of the golden feathers for certain puzzles. But even that is tied directly to the golden feathers. And it's a perfectly suitable, well thought out, thoroughly explored and well designed mechanic. It's nice to get that little hit of golden feathers. I particularly liked the kid that was opportunistic and bought the gold feathers from the visitor center for cheap and then sold them to us.
To pay for his college tuition.
Yeah. So that's just, we're like, oh, all right. And it's not like money is hard to find on this island. It's just everywhere. There's secrets all over the place. And every time you find a chest or a feather or anything, or not even, you don't get rewarded. Anytime you just find something that looks cool. I found this, and there's so much to explore. I found this separate island that had a really, really tall mountain on it that looked like eventually you would be able to climb up it. And I don't know if I could get there, but there were houses along the way. I just was so having fun getting distracted and sometimes just going out to see what was out there, even though the camera, and sometimes I was rewarded. There's a lot going on in this little playground, and that's what this game is. It's a fun, well executed, just cutesy, cute playground. It's really, really nice.
It's like, it's chill, but it's engaging. And it's actually, I think, really hard to pull both those things off at the same time. I play a lot of chill games that are boring, and I've played a lot of games recently that are very engaging, but I'm kind of like, aren't relaxing. I have to kind of sit forward. This game was very easy to get into and easy to just kind of see through in one sitting.
I completely agree. Cozy, usually. Very cozy, but there's a certain amount of charm. It's cozy and charming, I guess, is the way I would describe this. Ultimately, it's a successful game. And we talk about this a lot on Stormbuds, but which games have charm and character and which ones kind of lose the thread a lot. And that's what you come to this for.
You know what I thought about while I was playing this game? I was like, you know what this is?
What?
This is like the antimatter version of Celeste.
Yes. I see that.
It's like, what if you were climbing a mountain, but like everything else was the exact opposite?
You're fine with who you are.
It's Nobody's actually not that difficult.
There are
no ghosts.
There are no ghosts. It was on sale for the summer Steam summer sale for really, really cheap, but it's still not very expensive. It's still about $7-$8.
$7-$8, yeah,
at full price. So go.
Look, McDonald's cost that at this point. Okay,
Yeah, more than that. That's for dang sure. So go and check out A Short Hike. Really good things. This came out, by the way. When did this come out? On 2019. Okay.
2019?
For Windows, yeah. So that's how you know this is going to be the least listened to episode.
am I losing my mind? I listened to someone talk about... Okay. Okay, maybe I listened to someone talk about this on a podcast in 2021 when it hit PS4 and Xbox One.
Oh.
I was like, I remember hearing someone talk about this on a podcast, and either time is going way, way, way faster, or they did not talk about it 5 years ago.
Well, it's, yeah, that's what, July 30th, 2019, that's the one I saw and said.
Yep, you're right. No, you're correct. It came out in PC in 2019. And then Switch in 2020 and PlayStation 4 in 2021.
Yeah. Well, that's about all we really need to say about A Short Hike. It's a really short game. It's a fantastic, I will say, soundtrack on Spotify.
Incredible.
Going directly on the productivity music video games catalog. Absolutely.
What a good soundtrack.
Really good soundtrack. Great job, too. The composer of the soundtrack.
Including the track that plays when you finish the game and you're coming down from the mountain that has like a natural culmination to it, and then it ends, and it's a really good ending. Yeah, it's so good.
Mark Sparling did the Short Hike soundtrack. Yeah, it's a very dynamic, like there's layers to this music that get more and more intense the deeper you go into your respective environment. I typed in a short hike on Spotify to find the artist credit, and I also was recommended ASMR Shortbread.
Shortbread?
I don't know
like
what
the
that
cookies?
Is. Yeah, their top tracks are "You Look Fabulous," "You're Chill and Laid Back," "Deep Sleep Therapy Part 7," "There Are So Many Things That Make You Special," and "A Town Called Oban."
Sure.
So
I don't think I like ASMR.
So I just played. I just played a little sample of "You Look Fabulous," and what she said was, "Your eyebrows give away so much of your character." Lost my mind.
She's not wrong. You have very expressive eyebrows.
Thank you so much. Okay, well, I am going to go snowboarding, and then while I do that, we're going to have our ad break, and then we will be right back with more discussion for two whole chapters of Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail. It's going to be the large majority of our episode. We got time.
I wrote a lot of notes, and then I wrote not very many notes.
All right. Well, hopefully my spine is intact after snowboarding. See you then.
Good luck.
We're going to read some ads.
Do you know what you're wearing down there? Well, I do.
You do? I don't like that.
That's because I gifted you that sweet pair of boxer briefs with the King Friday print on them. Remember that?
Oh, I guess it is where I got these.
Want to know my secret?
What's your secret?
I dumped a body into Lake Michigan.
Want to know how? Have another secret?
Want to know how I know how to give great underwear gifts?
How?
I'm subscribed to YouUndies, and you should subscribe too. YouUndies is an underwear gift-giving platform that's all the rage these days that can help you find the perfect gift for your loved one. You just search up the person by name that you're looking to give a gift of a high thread count, eco-friendly underwear in our genital imaging database, and we find the right fit for them automatically using the latest in AI genital recognition technology.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did you send a photo of my junk to a computer?
If you can upload pictures of your genitals to the database willingly, but the AI will also scour the internet for pictures of genitals that have been uploaded by you or anyone else automatically. So who's to say who uploaded whose genitals to you YouUndies? But wasn't the payoff worth it?
I mean, they're really comfy. I'm not going to lie. These are like this is the best underwear I've ever owned. So, you know, maybe AI actually is good for something.
Maybe AI is good for something, especially when it comes to finding the perfect pair of underwear for your genitals. We've got boxers, briefs, jock straps, bras, corsets, garters, nylons, panties, chastity locks, chastity belts, chastity suits, hazmat suits, but just for your junk, and much, much more.
I will say, the pattern of King Friday has him giving me the finger and smoking a bong. I don't know that this is... It doesn't feel officially licensed.
Got one boob that's bigger than the other? Don't worry, we've got a bra for that.
Everyone has one boob that's bigger than the other.
Medium uncut? There's a jock strap for that. Is your husband really sweaty? Don't worry, our aerated briefs will make sure to keep the dick cheese to a minimum. Whatever you need, YouUndies has you covered. Go to www.youundies.com and enter promo code BUNDIES at checkout to get 10% off your purchase today.
Sorry, is that the character you then undies, like you undies, or is it YOU undies?
Yep,
Go there and you too can know what your friends are wearing down there. And sign up at youundies.com today to make you undies an us undies.
Wait, I'm one of your loved ones?
I said friend or loved one.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're back, and I gotta say, not fun. Snowboarding?
Yeah, well, especially in, like, July.
It is July, so it's hard to find a place where the snow, where, like, the powder is fresh. Also, Rockford, really flat.
Yeah, not a lot of mountains in Rockford, you're correct.
Rockford, it's, they tried to offer cross-country snowboarding, but that was a lot. That was a challenge I was not willing to take.
Like the picture you showed me, looked like they took like some high school football stands and like laid a tarp over the seats and then poured fake snow on it.
I thought it was snow, but that was actually just I-94.
Oh, so how did
which
that?
Which is not
you?
In Rockford. I don't know why they did that. But yeah, no, I just came back.
Okay.
I was just like, well, that money's gone.
Well, that's good. Now we can talk about dog trails.
Sunk cost fallacy. I didn't want to injure myself. Yes. Now we can get to what you're really here for. Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail. Epic. Epic discussion. We're going to talk about the second and third chapters of this game loosely, not in order, as buds might do.
Yeah, there is stuff I'm not going to talk about a whole lot because I don't care about it, and there's stuff I'm going to talk a lot about because I care about it quite a bit.
Awesome. I'm interested in the things you care about quite a bit. I also have things I care about quite a bit, and I imagine they overlap.
Hopefully. I will say this expansion, very uneven so far. Like, high points, low points. Mm. We're really kind of bouncing back and forth, it feels like.
Yeah, it's been a mixed bag for me thus far as well up until this point. Again, for full transparency, I've already finished the main story. I finished by last week, but I have some recollection of my feelings and some notes. Like, loose notes of my thoughts from my time in Dawn Trail as well, so I'll be going off of those without getting into any additional spoilers on purpose. Who knows? I might let things slip like I did through all of episodes 1 through 45, but I'm going to try not to.
I never picked up on any of that shit.
That's true, you didn't.
I mean, okay, look, very loosely here, the next trial that we do is the Goblin Trial with the goldsmithing, and, like, nothing of note seems to really happen here.
Yeah, there was this character that they had signposted on the ship over to Tyrol as being important, who was kind of a failed goldsmith with a name from Eorzea, whose name I don't remember apart from it starts with a J, and he's not Jandalin. So
I never wrote it down.
He doesn't cut my hair, so I don't care.
Notable stuff that happens here. Randomly in the middle of this, Gulul Jaja wants to spar with us back at the palace.
Sure. We got the trailer moment.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to like chat with us. And also, I guess it's like it's training. This duty trains us for the further duty we're going to do down the line.
Oh, yes.
Like we learn some of the basic Viper attacks, etc. We also, and I still don't have resolution at the end of this chapter that we finished today. I still don't totally have resolution on what Zaralja actually wants, because it's not wealth and it's not territory. But he definitely wants to rule because he does some stupid shit by the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. So let's go kind of let's try to be a little bit in order. Okay. So you guys have all been caught up. We're not going to go through chapter one. Listen to our previous episode for our thoughts on that. Chapter one ends after the whole river thing. And then we decide to just go back and hang out for a bit, and then we continue on into the goldsmithing stuff. I did kind of like it, and I want to say that the moblins for your one prediction with the short, there was a prediction you had.
Oh yeah, but we struck that prediction because it was too obvious.
Yes, we did, and it was really good that we did, because maybe because the moblins at the time were already announced.
Oh, sure.
I had forgotten that they were already announced at that point at one of the live letters, and I'm like, oh man, that would have been an argument. You're like, yeah, it's the moblins, they're new, and I'm like, but they're kind of not new, and they were announced.
I am looking at my prediction list, and I got to say, I am not not of a high hit rate. We've covered a lot of ground here, and I think, I mean, well, I guess we'll see which ones you got right.
Yes, we will. We do have a running prediction. If you're, this is your first check, we just have a running prediction list of 10 predictions that we'll cover at the end of this month. Get hype for that. We're on track to finish this expansion in time, so that's good. The goblin stuff was fine. There was a moment where Wuklamat gets kidnapped, which is pretty exciting and compelling right at the start. And until then, you have to track this fucker.
This was my first real actual low point of like two stealth segments in a row.
Really?
And it's not an interesting stealth system. You just walk behind someone and hide behind trees. I don't know why games put these in. It's like 15 years ago when every game had to have a turret sequence for some reason. Like, now we're all doing these stealth sequences that no one enjoys.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm surprised this is your first low point after, I guess you mentioned the goblin stuff was kind of uninteresting, but I think for me that was a low point because it was the third in a series of quests that were equivalent to the trolley quests from Shadowbringers. And there's more of those to come!
Well, the thing with the kidnapping thing also is that at this point, I'm still just like, and also like Bakul Jaja is so uninteresting to me as a character early on.
Yeah.
Just sort of like, oh, like compared to the other three, very one note, very just like full of like braggadocio, full of like sort of willing to cheat, willing to like lie to get his way. But he's just kind of a jerk. And so I'm just like... Yes, her being kidnapped and then us rescuing her is a good sequence, but I still wanted a little bit more out of it. It kind of just felt like Gary stole one of our Pokemon badges, you know?
I also feel like with all these delays, and there's another delay that happens, there's no real like advantage gotten by any of the other contestants ever.
Yes.
It feels like there's no real contest. I don't feel at this point, even with all of these weird delays, like the fact that Kona solved that thing in 2 seconds should have given him such an advantage last episode, and the fact that we're all dealing with trying to rescue Wuklamat while Zeraljia does not give a shit should have given him, well, also he orchestrated the damn kidnapping, should have given him a huge advantage. He should have been not even, unfortunately it doesn't really matter, it seemed like it wasn't a race because they're in the next section here, which I think we're gonna not completely skip to, but like there's a conveniently timed group project, but I don't want to skip over Valagarmanda, which is what's coming up right after the goblin section.
Well, and two quick thoughts here, and I'm really going to touch on this more in detail later, but I will say, even during the kidnapping stuff, I guess you're right. When it comes, I'm glad we're done with like the Dawn Servant trials, because it felt like either they should have actually gotten really into the kind of back and forth that you're talking about, or it should have gotten derailed earlier. I think
yes,
like it should have gotten derailed, like maybe like the end of the last chapter.
Right. Well, so we make it to, after we rescue her, we make it to the land of the top half of Urkapacha. We treat with the horrifyingly bug-eyed Yoktui.
I love them. I love the frog giants.
I'm glad you like them. I don't like looking at them. And I don't like listening to... I mean, the voice acting they do, the actors are doing a great job. I don't like listening to it. It's upsetting to my ear holes. But I am glad, you know, I hope they're popular. So we learn a lot about their belief system, particularly in their culture. And that's it's the fourth time we've done this now. It's really getting hammered in that in order to lead a coalition nation state, you must understand the cultures of everyone, and there must never be any conflict ever some reason.
And I kind of feel like we got the most of that here. Again, yes. Kind of dragging with just like a lot of quests of like giants pointing at
so
murals
dense.
And going like, and then this happened, and then we did this. And then this happened.
It feels a lot less like a video game and more like an interactive experience at an amusement park at this point.
Yes.
I'm feeling in the second chapter, going to the third chapter, I'm like, where is the video game?
Even the second dungeon, I mean, I guess second dungeon is, it's okay. It's a decent looking environment. Really bland musical theme, which kind of like made made the whole thing kind of feel kind of underwhelming. I was just like, okay, I'm getting through this. We're just going to finish this up. I guess we fight the giant at the top.
Yeah.
Hilariously, Kiwanda's party then shows up immediately behind us and has to do the boss fight again.
And we're like, see ya. See ya, suckers. So we both succeed, we come down, and we learn that as we were up there,
what should happen, but somebody should release this legendary threat that Gulul Jaja and party sealed away a long time ago. Bakul Jaja uses his blessed sibling's nature to undo the prison of Valley Garmanda, and it's up to us to track him down. And thankfully, we were nice to the people that tried to kill us earlier conveniently so that those people could let us into their sacred ground to go kill the or defeat the bird that's about to kill everyone. Okay. The fight itself and the lead up to it, cool. Great. I'm glad. Valley Garmanda is an interesting poll. Yule, actually...
I was wondering if we were going to get, like, a Quetzalcoatl. Yeah.
It's not Quetzalcoatl. This is actually an Esper called Tri-Talk from Final Fantasy VI.
Really?
Yes. I did not know this either until I was like, why? Well, I was talking with Zaf about this, Senior Bud Zaf, and... he had mentioned it's apparently from six. I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, it's in the caves of Narsh. And I was like, is it? And then I learned, yeah, it was Tri-Talk. And then the real name is actually Valley Garmanda. And I'm like, how did that happen? And there's just no information on the internet as far as I know. So write in and tell me how the heck that happened. But it's the very first Esper that Terra is mind controlled and sent to go collect from the Empire in like the opening sequence. And they decided, and it was in a prison of ice. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool, like, thematic.
Okay, sure. Yeah, you're in a prison of ice. There we go.
So the fight itself, really cool. It has an element control over three elements, yada, yada. Really great. Zoral, if you do it with the NPCs, Zoral Jaw stops by to help out. Nice
yeah,
of him, I guess.
There's a bit where we're going in to fight it. We have to do it on sacred ground. And, like, the frog giants don't want to let us in.
Yeah.
And Zoral Jaw is like, we'll just kill you to get in there and defeat it. And I'm kind of on his side because, like, this thing's going to cause mass destruction and hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths.
Well,
like,
yeah. Thankfully, Wilkelmot had the benefit of having been owed a favor so that bloodshed didn't come to necessary. But, like, yes, it drives home that Zoral Jaw wants to rule with bloodshed and fear, I guess. Relatively uncompelling as far as I understand it. At this point it's not exactly clear. I think maybe he said something along the lines of I shall go to war so that nobody will have to go to war.
I keep waiting to get more on that, and if anything it feels like he kind of drops out of the story at this point. He's sort of missing for like all of chapter 3.
Yeah, sort of missing, interestingly enough. But we beat Valley Garmanda, and everything is totally fine, and nobody is mad at Bakul Jaja for unleashing a worldly threat upon the entire continent. He is not considered any sort of that is not considered an act of terrorism in the slightest. Everyone is totally cool with him continuing the contest in spite of him having endangered literally everybody.
I mean, all's well that ends well.
It really didn't end well. Like, shit got fucked up. Oh my god.
And we end here on... We end this chapter on another note of introspection from Wuklamat, which is her talking about how, like, the thing that separates her from her siblings is going to be her love of peace. And she also talks about how, like, you know, I've been thinking about, is peace more than just the absence of war? And I'm like, yes, good line of thought. And then she's like, nothing gives me more joy than the happiness of others, so I want to maximize the happiness of others. And I'm like, no, this is how you get utilitarianism. This is how you go down the route of, like, planning to launch all the brains into space. Like,
oh boy.
There are other things that matter aside from the number of happy people.
Yeah, interesting. Discussion to be had there. Wilkelmot suddenly becomes Richard Nixon in a jar. that's what's coming. The solution.
Wilkelmot's like,
referring to the solution of liquid that suspends Wilkelmot's head in a jar.
Wilkelmot's like, so you're saying that the altruism is effective?
Interesting. So yes, we finish up with that, and then we head off to the coolest zone yet, Yachtel.
Yes, this is the first really compelling zone.
This zone sucks. But what do we do when we get there?
Cooking contest.
We gotta go make tacos.
Man, really not beating the Hunter x Hunter comparisons I made earlier, by the way. This is just the Hunter exam.
Like a random group project.
Yeah, we split up into teams of two, which, okay. Actual story quibble here.
Yeah.
Pairing us up with Kona. Pairing us up with Kona is the most boring version of this.
Yeah,
already like him.
Yeah. We didn't need to know more about him or anything like that. It could have been really fun to have to struggle at some point and try to, like, overcome Bakul Jaja's sabotage. Or just Zoral Jaw so that we could get whatever the fuck's going on with him.
But no,
but we didn't.
We're teamed up with Kona.
We just haven't resolved the fact that Bakul Jaja did successfully steal one of our things, and we're just allowed to keep going. I don't know the rules of this entire thing. There are no rules. Like, there are no rules to this contest.
Early on, they're like, if you attack other contestants, you're disqualified. And then it's like, but I guess if you hire other people to attack them on your behalf, you're not disqualified?
Yeah, but the other people is another contestant that you're hiring for the other contestant. It's a Bakul Jaja, Galul Jaja needs to kind of... Maybe send carrier pigeon. Just figure out what's going on.
Have some people just watching what's happening. Have some like inspectors, you know, examiners even.
Or what are they even called? The people that are in charge of the trials.
Advocates? No, they're
I don't remember.
Okay.
But those people, you would think they would be like, hey, this sucks.
Okay. Snippets from this cooking contest that I found amusing or interesting. Alfano being very excited to go gather firewood again.
Absolutely, that's his jam. You know, he loves that shit.
Part of the pitch that Galul Jaja used to unify everyone was an awareness of the fact that like Eorzea is across the sea and they're way more advanced. And at some point, who's to say if some nation or empire over there might turn their eye west?
Ha.
What if that happened?
Yeah, what if that happened? That could have been interesting. Well, we also get a lot of context here, though this is a little bit more salient to me. There are two peoples that live in this zone. There are the Prothgar, who are named something else, and then the Mamulja, who live down below. So there's a pretty obvious kind of caste system already forming with where people are living, which kind of starts to explain some of Bakul Jaja's behavior, maybe, because he is from the undesirables.
The lizard level. People who are forced to live down in the deep jungle.
Yeah, where there's no sunlight. And they're
lizards, so yes. Like they're cold-blooded. I imagine that it's not super comfy down there.
It's so chilly. The cooking contest then thus is it happens and we win, and the other two didn't get the right banana leaves from down below because they didn't care enough. And that's supposed to be symbolic of who cares about the nation and who doesn't.
I guess.
Get it?
Sure.
Okay. More pertinently, we are called by this by the adjutant. I can't remember the name, the officiant, who wants to confess that he believes he is Wuklamat's biological father.
Yes,
in confidence.
Right,
and he does that super loud, out in the open, for anyone to hear. And lo and behold, he gets abducted and held hostage by none other than Bakul Jaja, who we then get to fight as Wuklamat. Oh my god! It's a video game.
It is a video game. We're doing things.
I forgot that this is a video game.
It's interactive. Wait, what class is Wuklamat supposed to be?
Warrior.
This is Warrior? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Warrior. This is how Warrior controls.
Did you like it?
It was fine.
Yeah, she's swing her axe.
I'm surprised we haven't done Warrior as someone else up until this point.
Moonbreda.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That's so far back.
Yeah.
That's so long ago.
She's kind of filling the shoes in.
I guess, yeah, big axe. Okay.
Womp womp. Also, Ardbert, hello? Womp womp.
The fight is very fun, very cool video game, and Wuklamat overcomes her inner saboteur to finally beat Bakul Jaja in a solo confrontation. And he's fucking humiliated by it. She takes her shit back. And they kind of have a real... This is one of my favorite scenes, I think, in this. It's a little understated, but the sort of implication that... they imply very heavily that this guy is Wuklamat's biological dad, but she never acknowledges it. She's just like, so what he was saying, that's interesting. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? And then they kind of just have a nice moment of being tongue in cheek. And he also acknowledges sort of the importance of who the father that raised her.
Yeah. Galul Jaja.
Yeah. And, yeah. But I hope to see more of him in patch content and things like that. We might not. I don't know. We basically move on to the lower half where shit starts to pop the fuck off.
Okay. So high point of the expansion for me so far, which I did not expect. Are you fucking kidding me? Everything. The Buckwheel Jaja subplot is like the most interesting.
It's really
thing.
Good. Once we get to what's it called? Mammon?
I think Mammon.
Yeah. Everyone fucking hates us. The trial we have to face is an arcane magic version of Galul Jaja in his prime, but the dick bag. But Bukulmat refuses to participate in it until she understands something of her people. So we have to go around and talk to everyone for a million years. So skip all that.
But
there's one person who comes like who's like, hey, come talk to me over in a cave in the West.
Well, and even before that, like the one thing about this is a scene where I kind of sat up in my chair and started paying attention, because the vibe at this scene when you arrive in this place. It's like you're friends with a kid who's kind of a big jerk. But you go home after school to hang out with him once, and like as soon as you walk in the front door, he immediately cringes because his dad starts opening like a bunch of verbal abuse on him, and it's just a really disorienting.
Yeah, that's right.
But Bukul Jaja shows up, and the fucking
I don't remember his dad.
I have it down here. It's like Zareel Jaja. Zareel Jaja is his father, and he just starts berating him and calling him a failure and basically telling him to like practically like leave and never come back.
Yeah, he does the Fortunato special.
And Bukul Jaja, this imposing, it's like, you know, large, constantly sort of like, you know, like I said, like real like. Machismo figure, just immediately he shrinks and he's stammering and he's apologizing and he wanders off by himself. Right. And it is like immediate pathos. It's like, oh, I understand exactly why you are the way you are. I see in this instant the environment that produced you.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. Then his mother pipes up quietly and tells us to meet her off, and we learn the secret of... There's some other shit where we're learning the context of how horrible it is to live down below the treetops, and we solve their problems for them with just like a tiny bit of understanding of how ether works. And I was like, cool, all right, well, sucks that nobody here in this entire continent could possibly have ever figured that out. I guess I don't know. This whole continent is portrayed as lacking in science in a way that is annoying.
Yeah.
All right. But we head on over to the west where there's a cave, and then there's like a deeper cave in the cave. And we learn the truth about the entire village of Mammon and the truth behind the Blessed Siblings. And I cannot help but wonder how long they have held on to this truth.
Yes, because there's two things here. The first is that the first thing we learn is that the Blessed Siblings, like the two-headed lizards, the super strong ones, they are not like, they're not just like renowned warriors. They are these almost sort of like mythologically heroic figures within the culture. Like the thing that they hold on to as hope is the idea that by breeding more Blessed Siblings, they can like reach some kind of deliverance or some sort of like, you know, way out of like the way, like their circumstance in life. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that it turns out that you don't just get Blessed Siblings by accident. It turns out actually you have to try and make a lot of them, and 99% of them die in infancy. And it is a horrifying, sort of like desperate bioengineering project.
So Bukul Jaja views his dead, the dead infants as his siblings, and views that everything he does is in their name and for their sacrifice, to be not in vain. He has to win this contest for the sake of winning it and proving that he can bring his people to salvation, which is super interesting and super compelling. And I really liked it.
Yeah, and then Wuklamot steps up and does her whole like offer of friendship type thing. Like, we can solve this, we can fix it, we don't need to be competitive about this, we can all cooperate. And at this point, Bukul Jaja rockets up my Dawn Servant candidate rankings as potentially the best actual leader of the bunch, because he just makes the immediate bold decision to in fact use his station to go out and reject this tradition that is like a huge pillar of their society, and in fact make the case for doing things differently.
Yeah, so he gives us his skin.
Here's my skin.
So it's a return of here's my skin, so that we can gather people to talk to them about how fucked up this all is, and that, hey, he's just as fallible as the rest. He's just a person. We shouldn't be doing this, elevating these people. We should be working together to make our society a better place using reasonable things like policy.
And what if we brought you some new plants that actually thrived on the radiation from all those rocks?
there's a lot of plants on this planet that thrive on this weird rock radiation, and also some from other plants that we found, I guess. I don't know where they pulled it from, but why not? It's great. We help diversify their agriculture, and then we engage in the trial.
I think this plot is really good, except for one kind of ball that it drops at the very end. Which is that, like...
After, is it like after, well, because we fight Galul Jaja in his prime with the head of Resolve and Reason.
And then it has to do with the real Jaw.
And then, oh, okay, yeah.
Should I talk about this now?
Sure, I think so. I was going to talk about, but like the sudden appearance of Mr. Kettenram.
Oh, yeah,
at
yeah.
the end of that fight.
Oh, right, I forgot about him.
Yeah, I mean, that guy. Yeah, I don't know, he's weirdly important for somebody who feels very unimportant.
Okay, I want to put a pin in the stuff with the real Jaw. Let's come back to that.
Yeah, but Kettenram shows up. He's the guy that is the first Eorzean explorer to have reached the New World. He is Columbus. Actually, is Columbus... Was he? I can't remember if he was actually first or if he stole that too.
I mean, I guess the Vikings, but...
I guess, yeah, whatever.
From Spain, I guess.
They're all bad. But this guy's good, and he helped steal Valargamanda and everything. And he's still alive in here, and he's an old man, old Rogadin man, who... oh, yeah, and the reason he shows up is because of Zareal Jaw's refusal to give us the gem... in spite of us having succeeded the trial. So he's like, and he's like, hey, you have to do it. And Zareal Jaw's like, oh man, it goes away.
You know what we missed here? You know what we missed in the middle here?
What did
the
I miss?
The coolest single moment in the entire expansion so far.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry.
The single coolest moment so far, which is when we're going to try and fight this giant ghost of Galul Jaja that Zareal has summoned. And Kona's like, well, can I join in the fight? And he's like, well, no, because you're another contestant. And so Kona then throws his tablet in the air and shoots it with his gun and says, I resigned then.
And I was like, no! My prediction! Son of a bitch! But it was so cool.
It's a moment that tells you everything about his character. This is a guy who has basically given up on the contest and is like, fuck it. Like, I'm all in on Wuklamot right at this point.
It's like, I can still help out with technology without being the Dawn Serpent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, come on. It's pretty clear you can do that. But yeah, he helps us out. That's a cool fight. And... then we get to all this stuff where Zareal Jaw is a big baby, and then Kettenram says, you have to. And then Zareal Jaw's like, aw, dang it.
I was like, the ultimate fantasy. What if your piece of shit dad actually apologized and took full culpability for how he treated you?
And then he does do that at the end.
Yeah, that's the...
You don't like?
We'll get there. Yeah,
I don't like that he apologized.
Actually, yes, because we'll get there.
Okay.
What's in
the way between now and there?
We go into the Golden City by fighting our way through the child grave.
The child grave dungeon. Yeah. That dungeon's sick. That music's amazing.
Great music. Questionable choice for a dungeon concept.
I thought it was bold and brash. And
certainly.
And interesting. That's certainly a great place to hide a Golden City. Past a child graveyard. No one would think to look there.
Which brings us to the Techno Pyramid.
The Techno Pyramid. Here we are. We're seeing the Techno Pyramid that we saw in the launch trailer. And that's it.
It's ominous.
It's ominous, but we have all the pieces.
We do. We can put them in the dual disc.
We put all of those MacGuffins into the dual disc. And what should be in front of the Golden City but a little barrier made out of energy? And what should come out of the podium but a little thing that pierces that barrier?
Yay!
Yes! Lost one and I got one! MacGuffin, pierce the barrier!
Fine.
Oh, but don't worry, there's more. there's more about MacGuffins later.
Oh,
because
boy.
Because once we head back to Tuliolol, having found it, and there's two major things that happen. Contest is over. Wuklamot gets the throne, right?
Yes.
At this point.
One thing really quick.
Yeah.
I will say, standing there in the control room to open the gate to whatever the Golden City is or whatever, the ominous feeling isn't just that the vibes are ominous. It's also kind of like, why did Galul Jaja make this the final point that the Dawn Servant should, like, it's just like, it's
why,
like,
did he do that?
Like
that's a genuine question for me.
Okay, like I
why?
Because, maybe we'll try and interpret that later once I learn more about this game.
Yeah,
but it just
let me sit on that.
It makes the whole contest have this very weird feeling in retrospect of like, what were you setting someone up to do?
Yeah, it's like, clearly you're not just setting someone up to be the next Dawn Servant. You're
like, you want them to know about this place. To what end?
So you want them to know about this place now that you've kept hidden for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Anyway, we get back.
And then the two things happen. One is that Wuklamat accepts the Dawn Servant title, but she accepts herself as the head of reason. And who should she jump down into the audience and point to or to head of resolve? And who should she jump down to in the audience to point to be her head of reason? Kona,
Kona!
Shit, I hit my microphone.
So you're back in.
Back in on the, I'm going to, we're going to talk about this later.
You can have a half point
for
that.
I get a half point for that. I'm not going to fight for a whole
Look,
point.
Look, I might be batting 0 for 0 in this expansion, so we'll see how much it matters. I should have done a few more that weren't jokes.
I'll take the half point. Because, like, I think, as I was playing through and I was seeing the resolve and reason and all sorts of stuff, I was like, oh, I see what's going to happen.
Okay.
Like, they're foretelling us, dang it. Had I only known more, I would have made the right prediction. But
no, Wuklamat does the reveal and like she reveals this giant stone carving she made that like really depended on him saying yes. Like,
oh, yeah. Fuck. Good thing I had this made. But I think that's better than Monarchy. So I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I think Bakul Jaja should have a role in this administration. Like, put him in the cabinet. We do get another story reveal here also, which is,
oh yeah, this is really good.
I'm sorry. I've said so many Jaws and Jaja.
Galul Jaja. The head of resolve finally announces that the head of reason has died.
Has been dead for years.
Has been dead for 3 years. Before that, the head of reason was taking longer and longer naps, so to speak. It was on its way out.
Yeah, the head of reason, who this whole game so far has been covered in kind of this like face shroud and said to have been sleeping the whole time.
Yes. And it wasn't until we had a new Dawn Servant ready and in place that he wanted to announce that so that people wouldn't be panicking or anything, which is, I think, makes sense. It's also, what a weird state to be in.
Yeah, like, it just,
there's a dead head on you, that's of the dead head of your brother that's been there this whole time on your shoulder.
The things that it implies about what his experience has been like for the last few years are disturbing to think about.
But also, but there's like a silver lining in that, like, well, he gets to be his own person for these last few years.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or he dies of old age. And
he gets to be a viper.
He gets to be a viper. Everyone's a viper. So we learn about that, and while we're learning about that, it cuts over to the deep part of Yuktel, where Khetan-Ram is heading home, and he gets knocked out.
He does.
By someone from the roof. I thought he was just dead because it was a slashing noise, and he fell down with his eyes rolled in his head and from somebody that came on the fucking ceiling, but he was just knocked out, I guess. I don't know.
Okay,
they
whatever.
Didn't want to take that swing.
Also, at this point,
sure, that's nothing.
Also, at this point, at some point here, we run around and we have a conversation with Zareal Ja about Bakul Jaja.
Yeah,
and this
we sure do run around and have a lot of conversations this expansion.
It's the one with Zareal in particular that kind of pissed me off because, like, at this point, it's like everything is forgiven with Zareal, and he's just being like, "Yeah, Bakul Jaja, he's kind of a handful sometimes." And I'm like, "No, you don't get this. You have not earned this."
But
like,
Bakul Jaja is totally okay with having unleashed.
Like just
everything. This game is all about forgiving everyone's bullshit, I guess.
It is, but the thing it made me think about is that, like, this game really does not have any room for characters who are just kind of nasty. It has room for people who are, like, misguided fools and maniacs and people who sort of, like, and people who, like, who are doing, like, the wrong things for the right reasons, but it doesn't really just have room for someone who just is kind
ruthless.
Of a piece of work.
Who's, like, or ruthless. Even, like, even Rowena, who is the most ruthless ultra-capitalist and is in charge of all the tombstones and everything in the House of Splendors, is seen in kind of a comical, nice light, even even though everyone's like totally scared of her. That's like, that's a joke. And not like she owns everyone, which is the reality of a capitalist monopoly like that. Anyway, this game's not trying to talk about that stuff. It's trying to talk about...
It's really not. It's just like...
Emotions.
It's a very optimistic game about a lot of things about like human nature and stuff like that in a way that is good and uplifting a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And just occasionally, I'm just like, I wish it had just a little bit of bite to it.
And I think... A mini version of what's happening to Kona is the same thing that happened to Zero, wherein the interesting thing, the things that made Kona really interesting was that he was really serious and a bit standoffish and a bit awkward, are then being shut out in favor of communalism,
yes,
and agreement and being personable. And it's like, just let him be kind of a troubled genius.
Yeah, like, I also wrote this down. Kona was the other character also where I was like, there's a little bit of edge that's feel like it's been sanded off here, where his character could be a little more interesting if he just got to, like, I don't know, he could be self-interested in a way that, like, might put us at odds with him.
Yeah. Like, the contest very much, everyone felt like it delted into Wuklamot really, really quickly without actually... Like, the contest very quickly delted into Wuklamot, and then it just kind of was a straight line from maybe, like, level 62 to 66 or 7 or whatever, where it was like, oh, there's just no... Wuklamot's definitely not dying. That prediction's not...
Oh, Dawn Servant is... The Dawn Servant selection plot is over.
And is that where you finished off?
No, I then finished... Okay. I did... So... According to the guide that I was looking at, it then took me up through like the next dozen or so, I guess like half dozen quests in the next zone.
Oh, fuck yeah. This zone slaps.
Oh, really? Oh, you like this zone?
Dude, the Wild West zone?
Except for
it slapped right at the start because the guys are like in American accents and they're like, whoa, howdy, partner. And I was like, oh, finally. They're doing crazy dumb shit.
They're doing crazy dumb shit. I did not expect this also be the Wild West expansion.
But then, yes, it turns out there's, in fact, a broken train.
Okay. One thing we missed here. We missed a cutscene in the middle.
Oh, really?
Where Zeral Jah goes back to the City of Gold.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Oh, they did show this. That's right.
And starts listening to voices whispering from beyond the portal. And it's like, what are you doing, you dumbass?
You never
listened to voices behind a portal.
Well, you know how we got there, too? Kettenram had a spare set of keys to the Golden City? Are you fucking kidding me? Why does that exist?
It's so stupid.
What the fuck?
It's so arbitrary.
Just leaving us spare keys to this potentially mass super weapon. We don't know what the fuck it is yet.
This old dude? This game does not care about how any of the actual stuff in the succession contest is supposed to work.
A separate additional MacGuffin that's a goblet that just happened to be in the royal vault with no foretelling whatsoever.
Yeah, no, this
he
feels...
knew about the whole time. And as an aside, there was a separate thread where this has been a separate thread this whole time where Kryle is trying to look after her grandfather's journey, which happens to coincide with the Golden City, and anyone who knows anything just happens to be forbidden from talking about it. That would have been
This feels rushed.
This sucks.
This feels really rushed.
That part sucks to me because it's like, oh, there was an opportunity maybe that you could have foreshadowed this treasure that was, there's a connection there that could have been made. There's so many, I'm sorry. I'm so happy with a short hike and now I'm back to being a curmudgeon.
This feels very rushed. This feels very sort of like, we're just going to skip over a bunch of middle steps and Zeral Jah is now listening to the voices behind the portal, which you never do.
That's fine. That's like, I don't, you know, I'm not like the one, I'm not the one for yelling at people in the TV to not go in the basement.
Okay.
You know?
I guess
like of course you should listen to the voices in the portal. I want things to happen in this game.
Okay, sure. I guess here's why it bothers me. Because up until this point, he seemed ruthless and he seemed like he's had like a weird vision of what he wants to be as ruler. But he has not seemed stupid. And this feels stupid. This feels like, buddy, what are you doing? So it's going to go bad for him, I assume. We'll see.
We'll freaking see shortly. So you're just in the town, right?
Western town?
The Western town.
We're in the Western zone now. Yep.
Yeah. So you saw, where did you do?
I did the little subplot with the deputy sheriff who also runs a gang.
With the bracelet?
Yes.
Okay.
And I barely paid attention to any of it because I found it deeply unengaging. But if you enjoyed it, please tell me about it.
I just enjoyed like the zone and the vibe of it. And I liked the story of it because I liked the idea of it being Wild West, because now we're in North America now. Like, this is what would do. And it was really interesting. It was a more interesting setting for me. And I could tell that it wasn't going to last that long, because it was like, well, we kind of know what's coming from what was teased in the expansions. But it's like, it was an interesting take on that. And it just didn't last too long. And it wasn't, and it felt like, because it had felt more, a little more earnest in a way, and less, because it wasn't tied to this contest or anything like that. It was just us hanging out with Erinnville, who I adore.
Yes, Erinnville is good.
We're on a mission to go with Erinnville to reunite with his mother, basically. And I was like, oh, that's really sweet. And I was like, oh, of course the train's down. So I was like, that's annoying. Like, okay, here's another problem that we have to help these people with. But and the bracelet thing, I was like, I don't necessarily care about the bracelet per se, but I did care about stopping this damn subplot with that rotten sheriff.
Yeah.
Making this lawless town a good place.
I think that was fun. I think for me, the thing was like, look, I don't think he'd be moonlighting as also running the gang. He'd just bring the gang into town and make them like the new sheriff's deputies. Like fucking.
Probably.
Like,
yeah. It seems not.
And then, he's the other, like, he's the sheriff, and then the deputy sheriff is a good guy who, like, when it's revealed, is like, well, gosh darn, I didn't realize he was being an outlaw, but glad you caught him.
It's like, he didn't? All right. I mean, this random kid did, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else, we just kind of...
Pretty zone. Yeah. I like the zone. I like the Western architecture. They're really doing the whole like oil rig thing, except it's for ceruleum, which
yeah.
That's
pretty funny.
I worry about what that's going to mean in like 150 years. But hey, that's a problem for the future.
Yeah, that's a problem for later, folks. But yeah, if that's where you ended off, that's where we're going
to
stop.
Yeah, I ended off with getting to the point where they're like, well, you want to take this train, but the train needs to be repaired. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, we were talking about the trolley quests, now it's train quests, I guess. Here we go. Well, next episode of Stormbuds, we are going to be talking about that next chapter, maybe the one after that, not sure what you'll have time for.
But, I'm gonna try and do two this week.
Okay. That's definitely up to you. But we will also be talking about another summer vacation game that I definitely have in my library that I bought.
Dave the Diver! Yeah!
I'm really excited about that one.
It looks cool.
It looks cool. It's going to be just fun video game that's a video game that you play and game in.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to have things that you do.
Yeah.
Activities.
That's really, really exciting.
Yeah, you're right. There is really not much gameplay in like anything we've talked about today. There are a couple of duties and a couple of dungeons, and that's
like,
it.
Man, we were talking shit about the sniper interface. Bring that back at least two more times.
It shows up, I guess, like once early on with the gold stuff where you figure out what's wrong with his workshop.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Okay, well, that's going to do it for our discussions today. Tune in next week for those games. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so without spending a single,
red
one in the one pell in the zeros column.
That's a better joke.
I don't remember how to say it.
In the ones column.
In the ones column.
A single pell in the ones column.
Single pell in the ones column. You can just rate, review, and share our podcast with your buds, and you can join us in our Discord for discussion of Dawn Trail and other things that we are talking about. It's a good time. Also a great place to keep up to date if there are any changes of plans in the programming. So our other socials are available as well. And without much else to say, really, without much further ado, I have been your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I've been joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodnight to the buds immediately.
Good night.
Doodles.